Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
How do you make a radio ad for an 8K TV that conveys the feeling of 33 million pixels with over a billion shades of color hitting your eyeballs? This is the best we can do. Samsung Neo QLED 8K. Unreasonably good.
You're listening to the most fraudulent F1 podcast with Dan, a.k.a. Engine Mode 11.
I secretly moonlight as Helmut Marko at race weekends.
And Blake, a.k.a. Brake.
Echo chambers of farts and idiots on Twitter after races.
It's the Engine Breaking F1 podcast.
Oh my goodness, we're back.
Oh my god, oh my god.
Is this episode 3 already?
It is, mate, yeah.
Right.
And still not cancelled.
Right, well, go ahead and hit that sweet, sweet intro, my guy.
Hey, I'm Dan, aka Engine Mode 11, and you may know me from such places as Crime Watch and Twitter. Yeah, welcome to the Engine Breaking Podcast, episode 3. If you're wondering why I look and sound awful, it's because I am. I've managed to catch some sort of virulent disease off my children. And I'm after this recording, I'm going to go out into the garden and burn all of our bedding and clothes.
What an intro for anybody new to the podcast. That was beautiful. My name is Blake, aka Brake. You've probably seen me on Drive to Survive season 1 introduction, such as lines made famous as
30 seconds until I'm canceled.
But here I am on this podcast, and tonight we've got a little guest who we'll introduce in just a second, but We've recorded and published 2 episodes so far. What happened last week, which was kind of surprising?
Well, somehow we've managed to break the Spotify algorithm and have placed ourselves 23rd on the sports podcasts in the UK. Now, to be fair, I didn't actually check to see what the other podcasts were, so they could all be shit, to be honest. Like,
you know what? I'll take it, man. Lean into it.
Yeah.
With your chest, man.
It looks good, but I don't know if it actually is. So, but we'll take it. And that's all thanks to you. And especially that one person that left us a 1-star review. That was beautiful. No words, no comments, just a 1-star bang. And I respect that shithousery.
Yeah, that was, I mean, let's be honest, like all the reviews should be 1-star. But if you're listening to this on your favorite podcasting platform or watching this on YouTube, by the way, Engine Breaking is now live on YouTube. There's a link, and just search it. You'll find it. Or if you're in the stream, there's a link right now. But we are hitting all your platforms fraudulently and very hard. Some short form content is coming soon. So if you're enjoying the show, tell your friends about it. Tell your Nan. I'm sure she's going to love it. And maybe, I don't know, come on our podcast at some point and tell us what she thinks about George Russell.
Yeah, we'll accept all applications from all Nans out there.
But shall we shall we dig in? We've got a, this is our first guest, third episode, first guest. I think those odds are pretty good. And because we are probably the most unbiased Formula One podcast on the internet, we've decided to find another former Red Bull employee. Why not?
Yeah, the conspiracy theories are just, is there, I can hear them being typed already.
Yeah, I think the number one hashtag that's trending on our stream comments and our podcast comments is F1ixt or fixed. So without further fucking about, we've got our boy João Jeanette. Tell us where you're from, what you're doing now, what you did before. Let's talk about the here and now and who you are first. How about that?
Oh, who I am, that is a tricky question. Just before anything else, Dan, that one star review, that was me. So as soon as I heard I was going to be on this podcast, I had to kind of level it down a bit just to lower expectations. So that was all me.
I got
completely,
you.
Completely understandable.
Hedge it, man. Lean into it, bro. Well, anyway, João, welcome, man. So
thank you.
I can't tell that you're Portuguese, man.
Well, you can tell that I have an unpronounceable name, so that automatically makes me as Portuguese as it gets.
Okay, yeah. J-Wow, as everybody at work used to call you for the dorks that couldn't do Portuguese.
That is my AKA. J-Wow is the best I could manage you guys to call me. Who am I? I used to work with you guys once upon a time. That was my last serious employment. Since then, I've decided to be a freelancer slash bum slash whatever it is.
You're not moonlighting his helmet, Marco, as well, are you? Because Dan's already doing that.
No, I mean, I can still make use of both my eyes, and I can't grow a beard as strong as Dan. So
fair enough. I think you. True. All right, so we've confirmed.
There seems to be. I was just gonna say there seems to be a pattern here that everyone that leaves Red Bull turns into jobless bums.
Yeah.
Like, there's a pattern emerging here.
There's a fact. Oh. Yeah. One might say that if that's a better alternative than working at Red Bull, then it's pretty low. But I don't know. I don't think so. I think it was more of a life choice than anything else.
Yeah. So speaking of life choices, what are you doing now professionally if you're not working in Wonderland?
So since leaving Red Bull, I've been kind of trying my best at being a performance slash race engineer. So moving from a factory role to a trackside role at different levels. So I did a bit of sports car racing to start with while I was still at Red Bull, and then a bit of Japanese F3 as well, still at Red Bull. And then after I left, I did more sports cars in WEC for a couple seasons with Jota.
Fucking hell, man.
And then I'm doing Formula 2 now.
And you, race engineering in F2. So that's a pretty awesome CV. If somebody saw that and they're like, they looked at what you used to do, which we'll get into in a second, and they look at like your kind of progression through this and like really transitioning your career completely from technical engineering, like very, very much in the weeds, in the nuts and bolts and the details to taking a step back. So why don't we talk through that? And like, Another thing for our guests, we'll plug it later in the pod as well. So, João, you've also got a podcast, a Formula One podcast in Portuguese, which we'll plug and give you all the links and everything else later in the stream. But this is pretty cool, and hopefully I'll come join you later in the season. I think Mexico time.
Yeah, that's the plan. We basically have a Portuguese version of your podcast, just three guys sitting, well, two guys and a girl actually. Sitting down after every F1 race, yeah, and just chatting shit for an hour.
Dude,
it's so much shit to be chatted that we normally struggle to keep it under an hour.
Yeah,
even though we try every week and fail every week.
Have we hit an episode under an hour yet? Nah, it doesn't matter. Like,
yeah, that's
it's fully fraudulent. It's a bunch of BS and a.
And the funniest thing is, like, we there's a really boring race, and we think this one's a perfect one to keep it at 45 minutes. Let's do it. And then we just ended up chatting shit about how boring it was. And it's hilarious. And then it's like an hour 15 anyway.
And they just lean into some random topic and go 20 minutes. Anyway, so current F2 race engineer, and you've done a bit of sports car performance and race engineering. Let's go back a little bit. So looking at your CV right now, aerodynamicist at McLaren from 2011 to 2015. And then you joined the big bad Bulls. So
that's right. Yeah,
that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. No,
McLaren was my first job out of uni, which I would say I'm amazed that I got that job, but I'm not, because I know why I got it.
It's because you're good looks.
Not really.
Okay.
The head of Aero at the time, he told me, like, he never learned my name through 4 years that I was there. He didn't know my name, but he did tell me. He just called me mate. I knew that he didn't know my name, because every time he called me, he just called me mate. And so he told me that, yeah, we were looking for senior aeros and we couldn't find any. Then we were looking for aeros with experience and we couldn't find any. So we went to students, and out of the students, you were the best one. And there were like six somehow. And
wow.
Out of those six, I happened to be the least bad one.
Yeah.
So I got that job a bit surprisingly, because I got rejected by every team on the grid.
Yeah, people are like, you don't have experience. Like, we can't do anything with you. And McLaren are like,
We need someone to run the wind tunnel. Can you start tomorrow?
Yeah, we need a grunt. And that's people say you get lucky, but you kind of make your own luck. And
you have to get lucky to get the interview, and then you have to kind of make the most out of the situation and actually nail it.
Yeah.
And I guess I did a good job back then. I also had like a final year project that was very specific and very related to aero, like F1 aero. I did a bit of form the student, which helped me a little bit understand, like, you know, which bit of the race car goes into the corner ahead of the other bit.
Because you go in backwards, or is that
just the pointy bits? The pointy bit should be ideally not going sideways or backwards.
Nick De Vries figured that out in his first Formula One Grand Prix with Williams. That was pretty good. Can we?
We're gonna talk.
I'm sure we'll get back to Nick as well. And then fast forward to the Red Bull. So, like, what kind of projects at Red Bull Racing? Like, what was your expertise? And speaking of, before we get to that, didn't your boss just call you "Hey cunt"? Dan, was that what they used?
For me,
yeah.
I don't. That's too much endearment in that term.
Okay. Yeah. Exactly. And if anybody's like that, that word's got some bad rap. But like, it's a quite endearing term anywhere except for America. But
Americans don't dig that word.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, it's not like half of our listeners are in America anyway. So, shit. Anyway. So Red Bull, Aero after what, 4 years at McLaren?
Yep. It was quite different when I first started at Red Bull compared to McLaren. McLaren was, you know, most people were from either Oxbridge or Bristol or Imperial or Southampton.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the only options. And then you get to, dress code. There was a dress code. It was like smart casual. So you couldn't wear jeans. You had to wear a shirt or
McLaren.
Polo. Yeah, McLaren, yeah. And then you get to Red Bull and the dress code is non-existent.
Yeah.
Like, By my second summer, I was shorts and flip flops every day, pretty much. Like, I started wearing shirts because I had them, so I'm like, I may as well, you know. Otherwise, I can just gather in dust in the. But I gave up after like a month.
What did you interview in, Dan, when you went for your interview at Red
Bull? I was in like a proper suit, and like, I don't think I had a tie, but I definitely had like a proper shirt and the jacket. And I was just gonna say that over that 6 year career that I had there. By the end of it, my wife kept asking if I actually had a job, because I just looked progressively more homeless across those 6 years. And she's like, "Are you sure you're not just sitting outside MK Central begging for money or something?"
Yeah.
I was like, "No, I've actually got a job."
Yeah, you beg for money and Red Bull team kit. Somehow you get that.
By the end of it, I gave such few fucks that I think I was sitting in my cycling gear at my desk for a whole afternoon at one point.
You go for it, yeah. I mean, because that was a big thing. It's like, and when the weather's nice, even when it's shit, like, go out at lunchtime, get away from your desk, which is something I struggle to do now working for myself, working from home. It's like, now I've got work to do. I'm grinding. I'm like, I should probably go ride my freaking bike. But so I my interview, I think I wore like something smart, casual. And then I see Rocky, who was interviewing me for my first interview, he's wearing a fucking hoodie and some travel kit jeans. And I was like, this dude's in PP jeans interviewing me in a hoodie.
I'm overdressed.
Memo understood. Yeah. You don't want to, but like, I guess if you show up to a job interview looking like a bum, that's probably a bad thing, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you'd rather aim higher than
Yeah, so for any of our listeners that are out here for career advice, Dan's done a couple videos on that. I've done a couple as well. Don't underdress for your first interview. But if you show up in a...
But for the second, it's okay.
Yeah, exactly. Read the room. Yeah. Read the room. Use your deduction skills. So what do you... what's next? So Red Bull, what was your main focus and your expertise? Because like in terms of teams in Formula One teams, how do they break down the design of the car in terms of groups? Because I know there's a structure and it varies from team to team a bit, but can you tell us about your experience with that?
Yeah, there have been variations on the theme, but typically there will be 3 to 4 teams. 3 of the teams will focus on front, middle and rear of the car. And then the fourth team, usually they call it concept. It's either future car or if there's something really hot going on that season, like for instance, when I started, there was the kind of blown exhaust project.
You mean cheating?
Wow, everyone is doing it.
The cheating groups. Okay, we understood. Right. So let's just coin this real quick. Former Red Bull engineer confirms an aerodynamic group focused on cheating, or
that's all 4 really,
or just doing a really good job inside the regulations. But anyway,
that would be the first one. Would be a really good YouTube clickbait title.
yeah,
we'll run with that one.
All right, cool. We'll mark that one.
To be fair, most of the cheating that I witnessed at all teams that I've been at has been accidental cheating.
Yeah.
Because the regulations are so stupid in some points. Like, for instance, there's a rule that a certain area of the front wing end plate, there has to be a minimum radius so that the wings don't cut the tires so easily. So you don't, if someone's front wing tags a tire, it doesn't generate the puncture so easily. But when you're surfacing in that area, if you don't do it in one very specific way, you think you have the correct radius throughout, but sometimes the CAD software just deviates a little bit and you go illegal. And then sometimes you open the CAD and you kind of go inspect that bit, and I'm like, oh, that's not R5, that's our 4.5. And that's in the race car right now. So, I hope they don't.
I like how you said teams that you used to work for. You're saying obviously pre-Red Bull. So you've just outed McLaren massively, right?
It was both.
Yeah.
It was both.
I mean, those are the kind of things that you happen. You're like, these radii are fucked. So those are the groups. What was your expertise and like where you kind of like wrapped up your career at Red Bull? Racing.
So at Red Bull, I was on the front wing for most of my time there. I don't really know how I ended up there. I was in the front of the car by the time I'd left McLaren, but I spent most of the time on the rear.
I bet you did.
And then when I got to Red Bull, it was, I guess it was available. So I was mostly working on front wings, front wing end plates, and sometimes the inboard bit as well.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what made me a bit disillusioned, was that I was kind of stuck in that area of the car, which, I eventually got bored of, because once you've drawn 57 front wing end plates in a season, you're like, yeah, can I do something else now? But unfortunately, it was weird, because the structure and the ethos of the company, the ethos of the company, it was meant to be freedom, and everything's very fluid and everyone can draw anything. But the reality is, if you try to draw something that someone else was used to drawing, that guy would be like super pissed at you.
Yeah.
And then you just, get into trouble. So no one ever did anything outside of their kind of normal thing. So it got really boring really quickly, which is why I kind of ended up falling out of love with it.
Yeah. But I guess that's the kind of thing. It's like, I guess, I don't know if Dan, you have anything similar. It's like, once you're like good at something, the it's in a lot of people's best interest to keep you doing that thing, because they've not only invest in you as an employee, but it's like, you have those skills. If we, let you do something else, then we have to, or you who are exceptional at this job have to train somebody else at this thing, which reduces the output. And it's one of those things, like as soon as you lose sight of, development and stuff.
Yeah.
People get...
I was hyper-focused in one area because it made more sense for them, like you say, to have me focus on that one area and have a team of 4 other people doing the other areas, which it worked to a degree. But then sometimes when I wasn't there and I was literally the only person trained to do something, I did get some interesting phone calls at 3 a.m. from Australia from Olaf and things like that. So,
I think there's a balance, because especially when you go to creative kind of jobs, it does, if you're doing the same thing over and over again, yes, you're really good at it. I could drone and play it with my eyes closed. But at one point, I'd much rather just like draw something else. And I probably have some different ideas compared to the person who was drawing that something else. And that person would probably have different ideas drawing in plates.
Yeah.
And sometimes it gets a bit stale if you don't move around and circulate.
Yeah, no, I get that completely. And I think probably I wouldn't be surprised if every single employee in the sport didn't have that sentiment, and these people are distributed across every single team in the sport. And I think that's just the nature of it. It's like one of those specialization versus diversification things in career.
Yeah.
So you kind of finished up drawing front wings, which I feel like those are kind of like a coveted area of the car. Like, people are really excited about front wings. They're kind of sexy. There's parts of the car which people are perceived not to be so sexy and a bit of a grind.
Cooling.
But, yeah, exactly. Stuff like that. Cooling.
Anything related to cooling is at least sexy.
Yeah. And people are like, I want to draw the diffuser, man. Let me see some, show me your strakes. But
now the front wing is quite coveted. So coveted that basically there was another guy doing front wing and plates, and he happens to be one of the chief engineers now. And it was like chief aerodynamist at the time, which means that I had very tough competition to get anything in the car.
You're like, but I want to draw some sexy bits. He's like, no, all the juicy bits are mine.
No, he just takes. He'd often just take my bits and like tweak them a little bit, release them with his name on it, and then that would make the race car. And I'm like, whatever, mate.
Oh my god, I love that.
Fucking Adrian Newey, how dare you?
Yeah. All right, so we've got a segment later in the podcast called Fraud Watch. I think I know who Joao is calling out, but
I'm not naming names yet.
Okay, so after that. We haven't shitposted hardly at all. We're going to get to all that juicy, juicy stuff. But and we're going to get a lot of Joao's takes on these things too, because he's one and the same with us. He's super biased, and he's, you know, hidden secrets, you know, money being exchanged to pay the FIA off to tell one guy to tell another guy to tell another guy to do a thing in three different languages. But we'll get to that. So fast forward.
Talking about Abu Dhabi again.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, and Yuki was involved in that as well.
Oh,
that was a different one. That was Zandvoort, obviously.
But, and then the new one is that Red Bull were using AlphaTauri's budget.
Oh, well, let's save all that juice for later. So if you're listening or watching along, you have a reason not to leave, because we've got some of the filthiest, dirtiest, most unvalidated dirt, and it's definitely fake. But God, we love talking about it. So finished up an Aero at Red Bull Racing, and then you stayed in Red Bull but did something else.
Yeah, so the plan was to quit and go traveling for a year. And
Didn't you start that traveling trip and then like hey
No, I did, but the thing is, like, when I quit, no one at Red Bull believed me. They thought I was going to Mercedes or somewhere else. So when I said I'm literally just going to go traveling for a year and figure out what to do next, I'm talking to universities about doing PhDs, so I might go in that direction, but yeah. I don't have another job. No one believed me. So much so that the day I resigned, I got escorted out of the office within an hour of me resigning. I barely had time to tell my boss that I had resigned, and I was being escorted out of the office.
What did you do, man? They let me stay at my desk for the entire duration of my notice period doing work on the current car. And they're like, we trust you. You look completely dead inside. You're definitely going to stream and play video games and make YouTube.
I must have been a complete dick throughout my time there, because clearly, like, I was not believed at all.
No, but exactly the same thing happened to me, right? But what the worst thing for me was is that I handed my notice in the afternoon before. I got to stay for the rest of the afternoon. It was only like an hour or whatever. But then they fucking let me drive all the way to Milton Keynes, and like my fingerprint wouldn't get in the door. And I was like, oh shit, what's going on here? And they came out and they said, oh, you're on 3 months gardening leave. I was like, great, you made me drive all the way to Milton Keynes for that.
But isn't that the best feeling though? 3 months guard. That when I left McLaren, it was great. My timing was impeccable, because I left McLaren. So I handed my notice, left on holiday for 2 weeks, went to Seattle. And at the time I was just, you know, I just finished being a student. So I was still, basically I booked my flight to land at 6 a.m. and I was going straight from Heathrow to Woking, from Woking to work. I was going to sleep my hangover, not hangover, but out my jet lag off at work.
Yeah, that's what we call obviously. That's what we call hangovers before our first day of the job. Jet lag. Yeah, I had five pints of jet lag last night.
Exactly. And I'm on the bus from the train station to the factory, and I text a friend of mine and ask him if I instead of taking the bus I could get a lift. And he's like, "Oh man, now I'm going in early. I have a new herd." It's like, "Herd what?" They fired 23 people, like fairly high ranked people. And I'm like, "No, I hadn't heard at all." It's like, "Who?" Like, you know, chief, like head of aero, like chief engineer, all these people gone. And I'm like, "Oh, okay, so yeah, we're all going in early now to show our faces and make an effort so we don't get sacked as well."
Great.
And I went,
"Great vibe.
Oh, cool. Well, just ask Vince, who was the kind of head of the DO at the time, just ask him where I should go, because I'm guessing I won't be in the DO anymore because I resigned." And literally 5 minutes later, Vince calls me saying, "Yeah, don't come in. Your fingerprint's not going to work. Just go home." And the thing is, I could have genuinely just tailgated someone all the way to the DO, because you go in the bus with 10 other people going to the same place.
You normally go through the security access and a queue of people if you're coming in anyway, right?
Exactly. So I would have made it all the way to the DO and probably would have been escorted all the way out if I'd actually made it in. And yeah, and the next day I had to drive to Woking, and I had a meeting with a guy called Matt Morris. I don't know if you remember him.
No, no.
Also known as Chuck Norris. Because he looked a bit like him, and yeah, he told me I got 6 months off. So have fun.
I love that.
So it was a better experience. Anyway, going back to Red Bull. So I was on my notice period. They made me work just on random bullshit for a couple of weeks, and then basically the car that we just finished, we finished the launch car, which is RB13, the 17 car, 2017 car.
I hate that car so much, but let's avoid that.
It was such a turd that basically they went, "Adrian, please come back and fix it." That was kind of the message. And Adrian was doing the Valkyrie pretty much full time.
Yeah.
He was not around much of that winter. He would come to the meetings, but he wasn't, like, he drew maybe two bits for throughout that whole development with that car. And he was full-time on the Valkyrie. And so they went, "We need someone to just kind of take that over in terms of like actually drawing bits."
Yeah, detail design, not concept and stuff.
Exactly.
Finishing,
so the concept was done. This concept was broadly done. It's just like the detail stuff needed to be done. So they pulled me over to that project. So it was a team of three, four of us, depending on how many people were leaving at any time. And then Adrian would come in and kind of discuss and kind of set the direction that we should head with that. So those 6 months was actually quite enjoyable, which is how I ended up staying for a couple more years after that.
But that's actually pretty cool, because you were spending a lot of time one-on-one, more or less, with the Oracle, as in some sense.
The Yoda.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's got a pretty impressive CV, that dude. Does Adrian. So, and you were hanging out with him one-on-one quite a bit, like on a technical level.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was the main thing. It was, and from an aerodynamicist point of view, and in a project that he really cared about and he followed from start to finish, I have to say it was really enjoyable working with him.
Yeah.
Because he knew about everything. I think that a lot of the issues that happen these days is the fact that he's not as involved in development as he used to be, at least when I was around.
Yeah.
And people sometimes don't get that. And, you know, they know more about the details than he does. And sometimes they get kind of offended by, you know, whatever his opinions are, if they're not completely as informed as theirs are.
Yeah, yeah.
But in my case, I have nothing to say, because that was never the case, because he was as far into the project as I was.
Yeah.
And so it was actually, it was very enjoyable. And I found him to be quite, the main thing that I liked is he was quite open about, you know, how little we all knew about aerodynamics.
Yeah.
You know, they say that, you know, the greatest asset of someone with a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge is knowing how little they know about the subject that they're. Yeah.
You know, the extent when you're going from facts and objectiveness to opinion and like the realms of not particularly true and not getting too attached to that, because once you know that you don't know, You can't latch onto stuff that you're grasping at that's outside of your circle of knowledge.
Yeah. So yeah, it was quite cool. Easy to deal with sort of, you know, if he said something and I disagreed with it, but I could back it up with data, then that was okay. I that was not a problem at all. And obviously vice versa, but that would always be the case because he's, you know, he's the boss. But even going the other way, as long as I could back it up, it was fine. If I couldn't back it up, I would just, you know, kind of
defer,
drag myself into a corner and be shot in the head, as I should be. But I feel like in Aero, like big development teams, that happens less because the people who are in charge, like the further down you go, the more political it becomes and the less kind of, the less people know they don't know. And so the more they kind of get attached to certain things and the messier it becomes.
That's really interesting to think about. But it's like the less experienced people thinking they know more, then they become super emotional and attached to concepts that are...
Just think about how you thought as, you know, if you did Formula Student, when you're doing Formula Student, or, you know, when you started at your job, think about your mindset back then and think about your mindset now and kind of propagate that to 10 years. And I say, I don't know 100 times more often now than I did when I started working in F1. And that's a good thing.
Yeah. That's actually an insane insight. That is super cool. So we've got F1. We've got Valkyrie Project, which is super cool.
It will
be cool. Will be cool.
Maybe if Aston manages to find some money somewhere under a rock, it will be cool.
If they find some money, well, they can call me because I do stuff as well. I race car Zoom. But anyway, so let's fast forward a bit because I think that's super cool. And like, honestly, we could talk about that for freaking ever. But we need to get some filth and some dirt. And I think we should probably talk a little bit about just real quick before we move on to like what's going on now in the world of Formula 2, Formula 1 and everything else. You know, we've got a whole lot of topics. And I think Dan might pass out from the man flu soon if we don't activate.
Sorry. I'm listening intently and I'll just chirp in with a swear word now and again.
Yeah. No, fuck. No, it's bollocks. Bollocks. Absolute dog shite. So you got out of aero design and we went motor racing.
Yep.
So I don't want to trigger anybody with that phrase, but we went motor racing.
Yeah. So the first chance I got to go motor racing was actually Adrian's son, Harry Newey, who I think you met once.
Yeah, I met him in the simulator a couple times.
Yeah. So he was racing for a Portuguese team by complete accident. Well,
Obrigado.
Run by a fairly crazy British ex-mechanic, and they just fired their race engineer. And so they needed one for the next race. So Adrian basically comes to my desk and says, so you said you wanted to get into race engineering, right? Because that was one of the terms. So basically when they asked me to stay on the Valkyrie, I asked, okay, and you have to let me go travel for 3 months, which they did. So I went travel for 3 instead of 12.
Yeah.
It was better than nothing. And when I'm back, I want to start getting into race engineering because I want to kind of learn a bit more about actual race cars rather than just aerodynamics. And so Adrian comes to my desk at one point and goes, you said you wanted to go race engineering, right? So, yeah. What are you doing in next week? I was like, nothing in particular. Okay, do you want to come to Red Bull Ring and do an LMS race? So I literally got parachuted in. I got the manual for the car the day I got there. And we were running. This was like about 4 p.m.
Come on.
And we were running at 9 the next morning. And it was just a ridiculous experience. And I think
sink or swim.
Yeah. I mean, it went okay. And it was my first time talking to a car. It was my first time. Everything was the first time that I was doing it. But it was great fun. And I think we finished like sixth or something, which for an LMS race is not that bad.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of cars. There's like 23 LMP2s or something. So finishing sixth or seventh or wherever it was is not bad. And then kind of it went from there. I did the rest of the season. I got fired twice. in four races. The second time it was for good.
Dear, the perfect guest, the perfect first guest.
Yeah, I've been fired from every job I've had.
It's a wild west completely. Like I got fired after Silverstone for telling the just one-on-one telling the team owner, the boss, like, look, you've got a good team here. We just need a bit more organization. You know, just having a timetable would be good. And he absolutely flipped at me and said, just leave this garage and never come back in front of everyone. He shouted at me in front of everyone. And then the next day I had a question from his wife, who is a team manager, asking, so when do you want to fly to Spa? So I guess I was unfired fairly quickly.
That first time. Fuck off, leave this garage. We'll see you next week. My business partner / wife will be in touch.
Yeah, it was something along those lines. Anyway, the following season, I was still at Red Bull, and I decided it was a good idea to do Japanese Formula 3. So I flew back and forth to Japan 10 times that season while managing a team and doing the Valkyrie. So that was great.
Fuck.
I was pretty broken by the end of that season.
I mean, we'll get into that in a minute, because we've got a pretty deal-breaking Formula 1 season. I'm not sure what the F2 season looks like, but let's fast forward now. Like, what are you doing now? So you tell us about what you're doing now, like the last season.
So I'm in FIA Formula 2 with a new team, Van Amersfoort Racing, which just took over from a German team that did, they weren't doing very well. They wanted to pull out of the sport. F3 and F2. So Van Amersfoort took over, and we've been kind of doing our best to match up to the other 10 teams that have been doing this for 4 years at least.
Yeah,
with these cars and 2 years with these tires, and it's obviously not easy. But I think we've done a half decent job.
Yeah,
so far.
So it's like learning the car from an engineering point of view, and then learning all that. You know, because like people always talk about race engineering like it's this science and stuff, and it's not. There's so much of race engineering is experience and intuition, and then eventually you get enough tools, if you're lucky, to boil that down into some sort of a science. But it's still like, it's like chaos. Like we talk about, it's like when people think that Formula One teams have everything figured out, it's like, mate, have you seen Ferrari this season? Have you seen Red Bull in seasons past? Have you seen Mercedes rocking up after dominating everything, and they rock up with an engine that's not up to scratch and a car that has some serious, serious flaws that nobody predicted. Nobody's got this shit figured out. And then you go down the rung a bit to like Formula 2.
Yeah. You're talking about F1, and you have wind tunnels, you have seven post rigs, you have all the tools in the world, you have IR sensors on your tires, you have obviously the cleverest people in motorsport, pretty much, putting models together and everything else.
You did leave Formula One, so.
Yeah, I'm not. I wasn't one of them. I was a fraud.
Okay, you know what?
I'm we right all are. Yeah, we.
Actually, I'll do that later.
But yeah, it's a really tricky championship, because you think about Formula One, you have 3 hours of free practice before you go into qualifying.
Yeah.
We have 40 minutes and one set of tire of the wrong compound. that's what we've got. And most of these 40 minutes are usually taken over by red flags, because the standard of driving is, let's say, not the highest.
Is the number, like, there's F3, is that like third tier standard of driving? 2 is second tier, and 1 is mostly some pretty good.
It's not that linear.
So it drops off like massively. It's exponentially shitter the lower you go down the Fs.
Well, I think the difference is that F2 is 22 cars. So, you have a percentage of idiots in those 22. And then you go to F3, it's 30 cars. So if you take the same percentage of idiots, then you just have more cars about ready to pull a Latifi and just fucking destroy everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you saw the Spa F3 race. It was absolutely epic. There was this kid called Kushmaini. He absolutely sent it into the bus stop, and he would have overtaken the guy he was trying to overtake. However, there was a guy in front that got T-boned by this guy.
Okay.
So at this point, this kid is missing a wheel. So the wheel is like completely hanging off, like it's completely ripped off the car. It's held by the tethers. And you know how in Spa you have the bollard of pit entry?
Yeah.
If you, you can still get in after the bollard, but then you get a penalty. So this kid crosses at 90 degrees, the track at 90 degrees, to try and go on the right side of the bollard, because he thinks that somehow his mechanics can salvage his race.
Yeah, even though his wishbones are hanging off the car. It's like, mate, you can fix this in a lap, right? Just
And in the process, takes out two more cars, because he's obviously driving at 90 degrees to the racetrack, one of which was eventually the championship winner. So his race was destroyed by this guy who was trying to make it back to the pits legally, even though he was missing a wheel.
Legally, so while ramming two other fucking cars.
It's this level of racing.
Did you guys have any qualifying in Monza shenanigans? Because I remember a couple years ago, like, the number of cars parked on the penultimate corner, just like, and they're like, listen, kids, you're going to have to sort this shit out.
Yeah, I think the session was red flagged for driving standards, and then they were just like, we're not restarting, you're all idiots. I think it's been better. It's still pretty stupid. And I mean, they don't show it on TV so much anymore. I think to not embarrass themselves.
Yeah.
But like, they don't show the shit show on TV. But the reality is, out of 22 drivers, 10 had to abort their first push lap because of, you know, a mess. It's not necessarily like people impeding each other so much. It's that the tires are so kind of finicky, and obviously you don't have blankets, which is something that F1's going to have to deal with soon. And so the warm-up procedure is quite important. And yep, if you focus on getting a toe, not focus on warming up your tires, yeah, you got a great toe, perfect. You get into turn one, you hit the brakes, and the thing doesn't slow down because the tires are cold.
Yeah, and so you go through all the polystyrene boards and
exactly,
yeah, hit the super chicane. Nice.
So it's still a mess, but it's a bit better. It's less embarrassing, maybe.
Okay. So, like, I guess the last question, because I feel like we've spent like 40 minutes on your background, which is actually super freaking interesting, and I'm sure everybody's gonna love it, but this isn't a serious podcast at all. I guess just like one of those big questions, because we're gonna get this is the only time we've ever been serious on this pod, isn't it?
Am I gonna cry?
I think so. I think this is probably the most serious we've been, so we're leaving it out, and we'll ask just how fucking messy is Adrian.
Messy in terms of,
well, I've seen his home office and it looks like a fucking bomb's gone off in it. Paperwork everywhere, there's shit everywhere. Like, how that man does what he does, creating that much chaos on his desk, I don't know.
I mean, I'm not surprised, because mine's a bit like that as well. And also, I vividly remember him coming into kind of our pen of, I don't know, 4 or 6, however many we would be at that time, because the size of my team varied between 4 and like 12, depending on how many people resigned from Red Bull, because we'd get all of them. We'd get like all the notice period people over. So yes, sometimes there were 12 of us, sometimes there were 4.
The departure lounge.
Yeah,
exactly. We were the unofficial departure lounge. And he would literally grab any piece of paper available. It could be a tax return. It could be anything else, like just to sketch something. So I'm not surprised that.
Yeah. I love that. That is fucking mental.
He does love a good sketch.
Some poor sod has to go and then put that into CAD.
Yeah, can you scan my tax return? Oh, shit. They only paid you what? Broke-ass bitch.
Yeah, Adrian, this is my tax return. Yes, I make less a year than you make an hour. Yes, this is true.
I love that. So the last serious question is, what are you thinking your next plan is, like your short-term plan? Are you vibing and thriving in the world of Formula 2 race engineering? Do you miss designing? Like, the simplest answer to that question that you've got.
I don't miss designing so much. I do miss having good tools and being around super clever people.
Yeah.
So it would be good to have some sort of a middle ground between what I'm doing now, which is a small team doing our best with very little information available and not being able to get that information.
Yeah.
And Formula 1, which is kind of completely the opposite, but what I'd have to probably be in a factory. So I'd like, you know, if I could have my way, then I'd have find something that would be a bit of a middle ground where I'd have a bit more data and a bit more kind of track time and access to the car and the tires and, you know, to be able to actually do engineering. Because at the moment, I feel like I'm guessing half the time, or more than half the time, 80% of the time.
I think Yeah, I think people underestimate the amount of guesswork you need, especially in lower formula, and the gut feel that you have to exercise.
Yeah, which you know, being new to the job, the gut feel is just quite unreliable. So it gets a lot better with time, obviously. Yeah. So I feel like I'm doing a much better job now than I was at the start of the season, and we are as a team because of that experience that we've gained. If that can be achieved in F2, or if there'll be somewhere else, it kind of depends on how it works out. So it's not a great answer to that question.
No, it's a good answer, because you don't need, like, everybody talks about like having to have a super plan. Like, Dan, when you left Red Bull, did you have a plan?
No, I didn't even have a job to go to.
Yeah, you're just like,
I literally just turned up one day and I thought, you know what, I'll find something else. I'm done. And that's not a slight on F1 or Red Bull, but I think that a lot of people get to that stage where they just think, you know what, I'm done. The burnout in F1 is very real.
And I feel like the people who manage to survive for a very long time often operate at a lower level than the people who end up leaving. Like, not a lower level of intellect, but just a lower level of dedication.
Yeah.
And that's what makes them kind of manage to last that long. And that's probably a good thing. It's probably healthier. But
yeah.
I couldn't be in F1 and not give 110%, because what would be the point, you know?
Yeah.
That's a very good point. But it's like, yeah, it's not a slight at those people, but it's just like, I was at the same point. I was like, you know what? I've enjoyed every single experience I've had here. There's been highs, there's been lows, but it's like, I want to do something else. And like, you know, be that. So what I'm trying to ask you is, when are you quitting race engineering to come do YouTube? Because my channel's in the mud. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, clearly I can do both. I just have to kind of fill in the gaps in between the races.
We've got time. So speaking of, should we get into it? Speaking of one of the most probable things that's likely to burn personnel out, what would you say that is if we're looking forward to next year?
Oh, how about a 24 race calendar that geographically makes about as much sense as a chocolate teapot?
I love that. So
are you talking about going from Australia to China to Azerbaijan to Miami to Imola, that sort of thing?
The three races in America that we decided not to do anywhere near one another, so we'll go in and out the America three times,
and the one in Canada as well.
Yeah,
that's nuts. But it's like one of those things, like we talk about sustainability and like the biggest impact on, you know, the sustainability of the sport is not the cars running around a circuit. You know, you've got these 20 cars running around on, you know, Eaton race corn juice. And then it's like, yeah, we've also got to ship hundreds of personnel, shitloads of cars, all sorts of other stuff all over the world. And it's like, we do this calendar, which is literally back and forth between, you know, the East continents and everything else. And I was talking to my girlfriend about it the other night, and it was, she made it super clear. It's like, it's about money. And it 100% is. Like, imagine you had Miami, Montreal, Austin, Las Vegas, you know, 4 weeks back to back. Are you gonna?
No one would go to all four.
No, and like, and you know, sure, there are people that are gonna go to maybe two of them. The super enthusiasts that are happen to be blessed #blessed with a big fat bag of cash, because those races are extortionate. But what do you guys think about it?
I think you basically said it there with just the term money.
Hmm.
I'm not sure. So it's a 24 race calendar. China's on there on the 16th of April, but I'm not sure if we're going to go to that, you know, because they're still having some fun and games with COVID, and their protocols to get in and out of that country are super strict.
Yeah.
Yep.
I miss that track. That's a super cool circuit. Like, you know, there was hardly ever any fans there when we went there the last couple of years, or when I was there at least, but like, and it's a really long, sketchy 40-minute bus ride to and from the circuit. And the circuit's in the middle of nowhere. But that track is cool.
Yeah, that's a cool track. Then you have the issue of the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, where there was a slight terrorist attack there last time around. It's just like something small.
It's not a big deal.
I was there for F2, and suddenly I look to the sky and I see a cloud. And I'm like, oh, that's the first cloud I've seen in a while. It might rain.
Yeah.
That's not your average cloud.
A rain cloud.
Oh fuck. I mean that's gotta be one of those weird things. You're like that's kind of how I inherit my job effectively. My first job at the track was 2012 and all shit kicked off in Bahrain. Lots of unrest and there were petrol bombs, burning tires, cars on fire and all that, and some people were like
the Arab Spring when that kicked off.
I think so. It might have been. I'm not sure, but it's like people are like, "Hey, we want to leave." And they're like, "Okay, well, if you feel unsafe, you can go home." And some of them went home and they're like, "Actually, Bernie said you're not allowed back." is basically what happened for the few people that did exercise caution and But anyway,
don't miss Bernie.
I mean, we've got a 24 race calendar. Are there any triple, quadruple headers on there? I didn't look in detail.
We do have a couple of triples.
You've got Imola, Monte Carlo, Barcelona as a triple.
Love that.
And I think there was another one, but maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, it's like one of those things. It's like, you know, when I was there, when I was on the fence of like, do I leave performance engineering at the track or I go trackside? It was like, you know, I was on they were on 21, 22 races and I was race engineering tests and stuff as well. So it's like, fuck man, that's a lot of work. And like, I don't have time to do anything, but what about the guys and gals now, man? That's a lot of people. And people also forget, like, you know, Dan, for example, is like getting calls when the guys are in, you know, in Australia. And it's like, it's like one of the things that you're always on. There's a lot of personnel that are not only trackside but factory based who are on this, and it's like there's a cost cap now, but then they're adding more and more and more events, and it's like, how do you avoid burnout for
people
in general, not just traveling staff? Because people are like, oh, what about the race engineers? Like, yes, those guys and gals are making some huge sacrifices for this lifestyle and the guts and glory and all the champagne and blowjobs you can ever think of, but like, holy. 24 with a couple,
but it's couple okay long though. It's okay though, Blake, because didn't you only just fly in on the Thursday and then fuck off after the race on Sunday? Was you Hollywooding it up?
I think they
Yeah, see, real men.
Try coming in on Tuesday, setting up.
That's
the garage.
Right. Yeah,
no,
yeah,
we were Wednesday, Wednesday night or Wednesday afternoon. Go out for a nice meal. Not really, rarely.
But then you've got curfews as well, which obviously help a bit.
Yeah. That's becoming more reasonable, the curfews and stuff. But I mean, that's.
But at the same time, it's. I mean, when you get to these numbers, then it's just a lot of time away from home, and people start to lose their shit a little bit, and you have to start thinking about rotating. I think it's already happening in some teams. Like some positions are already rotating. Like performance engineers are rotating in systems as well.
And that's what I wanted to do back in the day. It's like if there were three performance engineers and I could get my race workload down to like 14 and you have a floater between cars or something, like that would be cool. And like even doing factory support on the weekends from the factory. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. What do you guys think about, because I like the number of comments and quote tweets I've had about the calendar, people like there's too many fucking races in America. And let's just call it North America, because Canada's effectively right there. That's an easy one, relatively, to get to. What do you guys think about the concentration of events in North America?
I mean, America itself is like bigger than Europe anyway, isn't it? In terms of geographical landmass.
Yeah.
So yeah, go nuts. Let them have free. I don't have a problem with that. Yeah. My biggest problem, and maybe we'll come back to this in a minute, is the fact that they've scheduled Spa to be on the same weekend as Spa 24. I think that's a bigger issue they're gonna have.
Yeah,
mate, it's fine. The GTs drive on the grass most of the time anyway, so
track limits,
they'll just they'll just stay out of each other's way, no problem, I think.
Yeah, but to the point though, another thing before you answer, Joao, is so the live stream over on my Twitch stream at break, they have informed me that Spa 24 has been moved forward now. But also, this is not the first time that we've had multiple U.S. races. At one point, there was three in a season, so it's not new. But people are—I don't know. What do you think? What's your take on it, Joao?
I think my biggest issue with it is not the amount of races in America, but the fact that you're making new tracks in America, which are not that great. The Miami track, I don't think it's a great track, to be honest. I don't think it delivered great racing, and I mean, it was kind of falling apart for most of it.
Well, the TV broadcast definitely did not capture it well, because in terms of overtakes at that point, it was statistically a pretty action-packed race, but the TV director was on holiday.
Okay.
They must have got the crew from Monaco, because Monaco has their own TV crew. So,
But the point I was trying to make is, like, you have some awesome tracks in the US. Like, you know, the Laguna Seca's, Sebring's, the, I don't know, things you've never heard of, like Road Atlanta, Mid-Ohio, crazy racetracks that, I don't know, maybe not all of them are fit for F1, but IndyCar goes there. And, you know, at the end of the day, you do a bit of tidy up with the runoffs and all that. And they're old school tracks that deliver really good racing.
Yeah.
And you could just take one of them, you know, or two. And instead of necessarily making a new like Las Vegas track or a new Miami track.
But we've got
all of our American listeners are now just shouting racetrack names at their computer or their radio.
Yeah. If you're watching this later on YouTube, or, you know, if you're watching this on YouTube, leave us a comment with your favorite American track that you would like to see Formula One return to. I've got a mixed feeling on that, and it's actually based on an experience I had going to a Formula E race. So I went to the London Formula E race, and it was my first time going to a Formula E race. And actually, spoiler alert, I've never been to a Formula One race as a punter. We've talked about that a couple times. We'll get back to that. The cool thing about the Formula E event was I hopped on a train, showed up in London, hopped on the underground, and then hopped on one more connection of a train, and I'm in the middle of the track. You know, and
that is cool.
And that is the promise that some of these city-based tracks. Yes, they're artificial circuits, but if the circuits are thoughtful, they offer good racing. I don't want to prejudge them based on, oh, it's another street circuit. But it's like one of those things when we start losing or not utilizing, proper purpose-built race circuits that are iconic in every way. They just like.
Yeah.
The Drive to Survive crew is just like, nah.
That's kind of more.
And I do know how to use trains, by the way. I do know how to use trains. I figured them out when I was like.
That's more the point. 26. I mean, I, to be honest, the best I have been to a few races as a punter, and the best race I've been to was probably Singapore, exactly for that.
Yeah, you walk because out of your hotel and you show up at the track.
Precisely, and in between F1 and FP2, you want to go grab a drink or grab something to eat. You just go into town, like it's there. You just walk.
Dude.
Whereas in, you know, anything else, you just have to pay 20 quid for a shitty burger from a van that normally charges about £3.50 for the same thing.
Those guys got to make bank though. And Dan's
fair enough.
Love those burgers.
It's fair enough.
Between FP1,
the demand's there.
In Singapore, between FP1 and FP2, if you want to go to Orchard Towers, then, you know, why not?
Hey, four floors! If anybody knows, they know. If you don't know, you don't need to know, and don't look it up.
Confirm.
Do not look it up. Oh, my God. That's another one. It's like when you was like, when some of the lads were out, it's like, guess who we saw in four floors last night? You're like, oh, really? Oh, okay. Okay. Interesting. So, That's another one. So we've got the F1 calendar. Let's go back to your neck of the woods, Shroud. The F2 calendar. You guys just finished Monza, and you've got a race left.
Yeah, it's in about 3 years' time. Somehow they decided that we should have like 7 races in 10 weeks, and then 2 months with nothing to do until Abu Dhabi. I mean, originally there was supposed to be Sochi, but then like something happened. I'm not sure what, but Sochi got dropped, and now there's no Sochi, so it's a 2 month break between Monza and Abu Dhabi, which is I think as big as the break between Abu Dhabi and then Bahrain the following year.
Yeah, it's something so like that.
It's two winter breaks. No,
it's a little bit bigger this year, but in the past when we were finishing the season in December, that was pretty tight between the end of the season. But I guess it makes sense. It's like, right, let's cram it all into the European season, give you guys a break so that you guys can go, you know, whatever, and then come back and have the finale. But your championship's already decided, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty pointless at this point. I mean, for my team, it's not, because we can still gain a couple of, well, one at least position in the standings. But
yeah,
I guess that's always tough to fight for.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's what I would say is it would be nice if, you know, we could have dropped one of those seven races and maybe go to, say, you know, Singapore, Japan, something like that.
That would be cool.
Kind of, you know, somewhere on the way to, not on the way, but like somewhere in the same kind of geographical area as Abu Dhabi.
F2 or GP2 has done Singapore in the past, hasn't it?
Confirm. Yeah.
But so they do kind of mix up the late, like Eastern races as well.
But yeah, exactly. I mean, it would make sense to go to the US or Mexico or something because it's obviously the opposite end of the world. But in any case, the freight is left yesterday or something for a race in 2 months' time. So I'm pretty sure that the boat's going to be kind of around there earlier than in 2 months' time. So it probably would have made more sense to add a race there and subtract the race in Europe. But it's what it is. It's I can't say that in the European season I've been able to do anything other than survive.
Yeah, yeah.
Like no development, no nothing. Just no. Literally, okay, this race is done.
Rinse, repeat. Next event, yeah, next exactly. event, next event.
Yeah, exactly. So it makes it quite hectic, but it's an experience.
I got you. All right. What are we thinking? What are we thinking next? We've got calendar. We've got F2.
Driver market and the shocking revelation that Nyck de Vries actually went and optionally decided to hang out with Helmut Marko.
Oh my God. I mean, and this is, I'd love to get both of your opinions. I've just done a video on Break F1 on YouTube talking about de Vries. Cause here's the thing. I've been so locked into Formula One for the past ever that I don't spend too much time consuming other series. So I was like, who is Nick? Where did he come from? What is his background? What's his path to not getting a seat in Formula One? So if you want to check that out, if you're on YouTube, it's Break F1. If you're listening to this, check it out after you finish listening to the pod, obviously. But so de Vries has just done sat in for Albon, who had an emergency weight saving operation. Interestingly, I looked it up. An appendix, on average, they vary quite a bit, but it's only about 6.4 grams, which is less than 3/10,000ths of a second of lap time. So I really don't think that's actually first order at all.
Did you look that up, or did you steal that from my tweet the other day?
No, I looked it up. I put it in the video of me actually Googling it. So there is proof that I did it. I don't steal tweets. All right. So
other people. And those 3/10,000ths of a second is around what circuit?
In general, it's an average, so it's a roughly kind of thing. So
I was joking.
But it's God damn it! I failed.
Oh, the race engineers are fighting.
Fucking hell, Blake! Come on,
hate it here.
Switch on.
All right. So realistically, if he gained that much weight, Latifi's still about a lap behind every race. So De Vries went up against Latifi and he scored some points, which has bumped Latifi down to 21st in a 20 driver championship. What do we think about De Vries? Because he has been talking to the good doctor about. So the reason is Gasly is being eyed up by Alpine because Alpine have fucked off all their drivers.
Yep.
No one wants to drive for them anymore.
Yeah. Well, let's go back.
Even kids who don't have drives.
Pro move.
You know, anyone. I think if they offered you a drive, Blake, you'd say no at this point.
I would. I don't know. I'd ask for a contract. But like, what? So let's go.
Well, they're on the podcast. They're on the podcast next week, offering us jobs.
So. Yeah, Alpine.
I think if Gasly doesn't work out, Jacques Villeneuve is next on the list because I think he tested last week and he did okay. So
okay.
I think he might be on the list.
Okay, Jackie Newtown.
I've lost track the amount of teams that Nyck de Vries is now currently linked to.
Yeah, there was a really interesting graphic on Twitter the other day of like the spider's web of all the up and comings. But like, the dude's 27. He's been out of Formula 2 for what, 3 years, 4 years now. He's been an FE. What do we make of him?
Do you want to go first, Dan, or do you want me to go?
I mean, mine's very simple, and it's the fact that I don't really know much about him. You know, it's crazy for me to say it out loud, but 27 making your F1 debut. 27 is like ancient now,
yeah.
In terms of F1 debuts, and you know he jumped in the Williams and he scored a point. Does that mean the Williams is actually not that bad of a car? I don't know. Whatever.
So, I'd say my take on it is from a junior formula perspective and like following his career till now. So I met Nick the first time at McLaren when he was, I think, like 16 and he looked 10. He's like a very, very small human being still. And at the time, he was just the skinniest, scrawniest little guy. And so he was a McLaren junior at the time. And he took, so he was just out of karting where he was very successful. It took 3 seasons to win Formula Renault 2 liter, which is a long time.
Yeah.
Then he finished 6th in GP3. And then he took 3 seasons to win Formula 2. Now, if you compare that to a guy like Oscar Piastri, who won Formula Renault on his 2nd season, Formula 3 on his 1st season, and Formula 2 on his 1st season, that's an impressive kind of, you know, progression through the junior formula. Nick did not have that. He was always very hyped up, but he never quite delivered.
And it took him a bit of time to hit that mark.
Yeah, and I mean, I've heard different theories. Like, there's an issue with consistency, which you see in Formula E now. So last season, consistency was not a thing in Formula E because you had this stupid qualifying
format.
There's
so much chaos in RNG in this sport.
Exactly.
Which is interesting. It makes it interesting. But in terms of like assessing him in his performances, it's like, are you playing virtual slot machine or something?
Yeah, it's funny. If you look at his kind of results over the last season, like just go on Wikipedia, and it's like first, 9th, retirement, first, 16th, retirement, 9th, 2nd. You know, it's a bit all over the place, but that's the same for everyone. And then if you look at his season this season, it's the same. But if you look at Van Doorn's, it's more like first, second, third, second, fourth, second, third. You know, it's a normal champion's progression.
Yeah.
And my view is that he won the title last year because it was such chaos that he kind of thrived in that chaos. In that, on his day, he's unbeatable, but he's not consistent enough. And I've also heard from your mate Pierre Gasly.
Gasly
mentioned that he doesn't think that he's very strong mentally, which kind of makes sense because he is rapid in a prototype. Like in an LMP2, he's an alien.
Yeah.
And then, but then you're hardly ever racing. You're just kind of driving around kind of on your own through traffic, obviously. And there's a lot of other different challenges, but it's rare that you actually have on track racing for position. And then you just like in the zone and the guy is very, very fast. He's not, you know, he's maybe not the fastest, but he's definitely in that group of 2 or 3 guys that I'd put in prototype tomorrow if I had to choose. But when it comes to single seaters, you need that kind of
mental strength and consistency. Resilience. Yeah. So of the current grid of drivers, you've mentioned Piastri, his F3 and F2 dub back to back. You know, he won F3, came into F2. Yeah. Piastri is one of those up and comers. It took Nick 3 seasons to win F2. He only had to beat Nicholas Latifi.
Gotif himself.
Yeah, who was on his 4th full season, 6th mixed season.
Listen, I'm not accepting any of this slander of my boy Nick.
Dan. All right, Dan's on front
watch. He sent me a lot on the teller to hype him up.
Big lad. So, who else on the current grid has also aced F3, F2 back-to-back?
George Russell?
Yep.
Leclerc?
I think those are the two.
I think that's it.
Lando.
Max was so good he didn't even need to do it.
Yeah, he just he's just like go karts, a little bit of Formula shitbox, and then straight into a Toro Rosso. And that's actually pretty nuts. But that kind of begs us to ask another question, talking about the certain dilemma that we've got with the super license points now, because there's some people. As I said, I don't follow other racing series because I'm just too fucking busy, you know, writing Python code to analyze Formula One data and making mid YouTubes. But we've got a little bit of a dilemma with the two things, super license points being one of them. What's our take on that? The system seems broken.
I've not had enough cold and flu medication to try and fucking make heads or tails of this super license system, right? How can you sit there and tell me that you can't give a super license to, what's his name? Was it Carlton Herter?
Yeah.
But you can give one to Nikita Mazepin? You can fuck off, right? You know?
Like, what is actually happening? Like,
do you want me to explain where that comes from?
Yeah, please.
Oh, please, someone do. Come on,
man. It's so easy. It's very simple. So this system was put in place with the guise of supposedly stopping Max Verstappen from getting to F1 because no one wants that, right?
Yeah.
Because it's too young.
After the fact, they saw it. They're like, right, let's make a system which is not Max. The system is not...
Let's not this happen again. We don't want this to happen
fixed.
Again.
F1 fixed, yeah.
And so obviously at the time, who was in charge of F1? Old Bernie.
Uncle Bernie.
Who's Uncle Bernie's best mate? Bruno Michel, who is the promoter of F2 and F3. At the time, GP2 and GP3.
Yeah.
And so this super licensed system was basically built to maximize cash going into Bruno's pocket and therefore into Bernie's pocket.
No, we've already had this discussion. It's not about making money. It's about saving the planet and being fair.
And so basically the system is built so that you have to do this, the Formula Regional, Formula 2, Formula 3, Formula 2 ladder to get into F1, yeah. Which is why you get as many licensed, like you get as many super licensed points finishing third in F2 as you do for winning IndyCar.
You know, that's fucking insane because Formula 3 is like a bunch of 17, 18-year-old kids on their maybe third season of, you know, the good ones are on their second or third season of open-wheel cars. And you've got, you know, legitimate racing drivers with a lot
drivers,
of race craft, with a lot of maturity and a lot of talent in IndyCar. And they're like, you know what?
You're paid a lot of money to do their job. You know, these kids are paying a lot of money just to get a drive.
Yeah.
And it gets even more ridiculous the further down you go. So this is how ridiculous it was a couple of seasons ago. So Formula Regional was a championship that was a bit of a joke. So the FIA tried to start it. They gave it to the wrong promoters. And then there were two competing championships at the same level, Formula Renault and Formula Regional.
Yeah.
And Formula Renault was a good grid, lots of cars. Yeah. Formula Regional had about 11 cars at one point.
But like a lot of the guys that we see now on the grid in the Formula One, they came up driving Formula Renaults as well.
Exactly. But they tried to break Formula Renault effectively, and that didn't work. So now it's all the same thing again. But this one championship, Formula Regional, gave you as many super license points winning it as winning Super Formula
in Japan. Which are like the closest thing you can get to a Formula One car without driving a Formula One car.
Yeah, it's faster than IndyCar. It's in the driver's standards is okay. They're most of them are Japanese, so there's a certain amount of spectacularity to it. But you're talking about Kobayashi's, Nakajima's, Nick Cassidy, Alex Palou, you know, professional drivers, good drivers.
But also, there's been a lot of the young drivers where Red Bull in the past have deliberately sent their drivers. Who did that? Gasman did a bit.
Yeah,
a couple of other guys did some.
Pato Ward was there for a bit when he was a Red Bull junior. Dan Tixon was there. Stoffel Van Dorn did it when he was in McLaren. But the point is, they stopped doing that because there were no super license points in it. So in terms of teaching a driver how to drive, it's a great championship because
absolutely.
It's a difficult car, difficult tires, high level of competition, high level of engineering. But if you only get 20 points and you go to F2 and you get 40 for winning it, then you have to go to F2. You don't have a choice.
Which brings us to another dilemma. What happens when you win Formula 2 and your dad doesn't buy you a Formula 1 team?
You're screwed.
Yeah. I mean, but that's the thing. And that's the whole talking point is the F2 and F3 CEO is defending the fact that after you win F2, you cannot compete in F2 again. So when you finish F2, you literally have to go do a different championship. And, you know, that makes sense on some points, but when you've had Mazepins and Latifis, and originally when you had Stroll, I think Stroll's a reasonable driver now. And yes, his dad has bought him a team, but Lance has become a very reasonable Formula One driver. He's not going to win championships, not in any universe, but he's not a bad driver.
It doesn't stand out as the worst driver on the grid.
All four Lance Stroll fans are going to send us hate mail now.
it's all his ex-girlfriend, so it'll be fine.
Oh, okay,
but like never mind that. So like what is the answer, because we've got this broken super license point which only if you drink from the correct straw can you accumulate enough points, and then
straw breaks as soon as you win it
and then you get to the top. And then you're cut off and it's like right, well There's Mazepins, there's Latifis, there's other people buying teams, you know, and there's people, you know, backing, you know, for example, like Joe's, for example, he's done a very reasonable job in his rookie season, I think. But also, his CV doesn't look spectacular, does it?
Yeah.
It's like you look at it and you're like, okay, but like somebody's backed him and put him in a car and he's actually done very well, in my opinion. So it's like,
yeah, I've been impressed by him because, as you say, the CV isn't there and the results. Okay, in his third season, he came second, fine. But,
yeah,
you know, it's not first or second season, then it starts to get a bit tricky.
Yeah.
My opinion on this is I get Bruno Michel's point of, if you let the same guys do it over and over and over again, then they'll beat the young guys because they know everything. And if you build a championship like he does, which is 40 minutes free practice, no testing, no tires, and just go and drive, yeah, then that's the case, of course.
You accumulate experience. It's king.
Yeah, of course. However, like, how does that tie up with a guy who wins it in his first season is now not allowed to do a second season? But a guy who doesn't win it for 5 seasons can do it for 5 seasons. That doesn't make any sense.
No.
For me, if you want to put a limit, you can only do 3 seasons.
Yeah.
And then you're done.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Or if you're that fucking shit, you get 1 season. And if you're abysmal, go drive something else until you get a result in a different series. Because it's like, there's a bunch of filler in those grids as well. They're just paying cash and burning cash.
Yeah, but I mean, teams survive on that filler, so...
Yeah. Yeah.
It's also part of it, you know. I kind of feel for teams at the bottom of the grid who have to take cash machines so that they can afford to survive. And sometimes it's impressive that these teams sometimes get results with the cash machines, which is good for them. And then maybe they can start to attract better drivers and one day do reasonably well. But it's how the junior form has always worked. But you have to find a balance between cash and talent. And if a guy who wins it, like Piastri in his first season, is not allowed to come back on the grid's weaker.
Yeah.
And because he won it last year, you
devalue those grids as well. Cause it's like, for example, Nick beating only Latifi. Am I that excited about that? No,
not
but
really.
He's been pretty adaptable and he's been good, but you know, here's another thing. Here's a solution to that tree getting cut down. You know, once you hit the top of the F2 tree, what about some more teams on the F1 grid? And then there's the question of, does it devalue the Formula One grid? What are these people bringing? Are they bringing more to the commercial value of the sport than they're taking away from the prize pool, from the big dogs taking the lion's share of that home?
No, fuck them. They can just stop Ferrari's historical payments and then evenly distribute that out.
If you can't put four wheels on a car, you should lose your historical payments.
Basically, if you bought on a championship this hard, then you're not getting any Christmas bonus money.
Mate, seriously. I mean, I feel like that's one of those things. They haven't earned that in a long time. And that's one of those things that's bizarre to see. But it seemed like in the press, Toto was one of the most critical of, Andretti coming in, who has a huge pedigree in motorsport. But I don't know. Does Formula One need them, or do they need F1?
I mean, remember when Haas came in and there was this big hoo-ha about
America,
but like, oh yeah, and they're not a real team because Ferrari and this and that. You look at Haas beginning of the season; they was kicking ass and taking names. Like, you know, that was really good to see. I think everyone enjoyed watching K-Mag come off the couch into an F1 car and put a P6 on the grid in Bahrain or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And so I think the more teams would not be a bad thing, provided that the current mechanisms of evening out the playing fields are working.
But I mean,
that's you need to have competitive teams. You don't want extra teams like we had in like around 2011, 2010. You remember when we had like the F1.5 teams?
I don't even remember that.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
It was terrible. They're like, okay, you three can come in, but like you have to use the shit engine and you have to start from scratch and everyone is rubbish.
But like with the rules now, what's to say that, you know, Andretti couldn't come in as a customer team buying as much stuff as they can buy from someone else and do better than Williams is doing right now, who have a huge past in the sport. You know, they were, what, when did they finish third in the championship? Was that 14 or 15? Anyway, either way, you know, it's not been that long since they were up at the top of the pecking order, and now new regulations. They've clearly missed the mark as well. They've got the Mercedes, which isn't the most powerful engine, and they're sitting back at the back of the grid doing, you know, they're having a difficult time for a team that's got a lot of experience in the sport. Like, you know, that struggle, I struggle to make sense of that. It's like, okay, yeah, you guys have a huge history in the sport, but what's going on?
I mean, history is not really worth much in terms of making downforce, is it?
Money! All right, money.
So that's Ferrari's Christmas bonus gone because they've absolutely thrown this championship away, which I think they did have the fastest car until the shutdown. I don't think they've got it anymore, though. But, Zura, I think we've talked about a lot on this episode, and we're probably just going to have Joao back. And
I'm happy to be back.
Good.
Yep.
Some other time.
Hopefully, I'll feel more human next time.
But you know what? That's all right, man. We're all gonna have those days. Like, it'll be fine. But I think it's time that we step onto one of our favorite segments of the show.
Yeah.
And I haven't thought of it. Here we go. Hold on. You ready? Ready? This is new.
Fraud Watch.
Fraud Watch.
I love it.
That is tremendous.
Michael again with another sound, but he's done our intro. He's also done Fraud Watch. And next, and just because he's been so good at it, I'm going to get him to do Engine Mode Good Boy Award. But I think I don't have anybody for that. But who are we putting on Fraud Watch tonight? Joao, since you're the guest, I think you've got to go first.
Yeah.
So you have to explain the concept.
Basically anybody in the motorsport who's very, very fraudulent, you know, and like they've had a howler, or they've had a shit performance, or they've bottled something, and you don't have to rip into them massively. It's super lighthearted. Nobody takes this podcast serious anyway.
Normally it's for like obviously the race that we've just had, but given the lack of a race, then I think we'll accept anything in the motorsport community.
I mean, I have quite a lot of candidates from my McLaren days for that because we went through a host of fraudsters.
It's got to be
Fernando Alonso.
Somebody who's like a current, like confirmed fraud, and it can't be too personal. Because
it has to be Otmar for me. I think Otmar is the biggest fraud on the grid. I mean, it's unbelievable how much of a mess he's managed to make out of the whole Alonso, Piastri, etc. situation. Like, you look at the timeline that was posted on motorsport.com about, oh yeah, we'll give you a contract, we'll give it to you tomorrow, and then 3 weeks later, still nothing, you know. And it sounds like the same was going on with Alonso. And so, I mean, how you managed to make such a meal out of that is pretty impressive.
It is
that
insanely impressive.
He's a fraudster. Sorry.
Do you reckon it's Zaffnauer, or do you reckon it's the big boss above him? Because a lot of these chips were probably set in motion before the Zaffnauer showed up. Maybe, I argue. I don't know. I do not know.
I'm going to say definitely Otmar from the stories I've heard.
All right, send it out. He's on the fraud watch list. All right.
I mean, the thing is, like, it's because it turned out in McLaren's favor that we're not talking about Zach being the fraudster here. I mean, he's the guy has offered, like, he's signed like 23 drivers to IndyCar with the carrot of you might get an F1 drive. Like, and you just had the same situation with Palou signing for two teams in IndyCar, and that's been resolved now that, you know, obviously they probably brought big lawyers on either side, and they ended up settling instead of spending billions in the courts. But I mean, I think that between Otmar and Zach, I saw McLaren heading in the right direction, and now I'm not so sure anymore. And the way they treated Ricardo as well, like publicly, I mean, yeah, he's not doing well. It's not working out. But to kind of come out in the press and say the things that Zach said when their car is clearly dog shit as well.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, they have a car to win races and he's finishing 12th. No, they have a car to finish 8th and he's finishing 12th.
But still, I think there's some questions that you got to ask. And like, being an adaptable driver is super important.
For sure.
Super important.
And I think that they did the right thing to move on from him. And he probably did the right thing to let that happen and not put up too much of a fight. But I think it's not an elegant way of treating it in the press.
No.
But still, Otmar is my...
You're fraud. He's on Fraud Watch. He's... Okay, I won't do that again. Dan, what are we saying today? Fraud Watch. I mean, this is your original segment from your stream.
So I had to think about this. And after everything I've seen on Twitter recently, I'm going to give it to Silverstone. Whoever fucking signed off on the idea of having adjustable pricing for the tickets.
That's criminal.
So, explain what's adjustable pricing?
If you don't know what's happened, basically Silverstone released their tickets for next year's race, but the prices increased depending on the demand.
Oh.
So some people, like, in the morning would buy their ticket for, like, I don't know what the figures were exactly, but let's just say £189 or whatever. And then by the evening, they'd have risen to, like, £280 or something ridiculous like that. And, like, people all over Twitter were like, oh, I've been in a queue for 10 hours. And then the website crashed twice. And some people, when they put it in their basket and then went to check out, the price had already increased by, like, £30. It was just...
That's fucking criminal, man.
Wasn't there a bar somewhere in Southampton where you went in and it was like a stock market of beer?
They had that in Austin as well. There was one of those. It's like, depending on what people are buying and drinking, you can, like, get all the lads together and, like, drive down the price of your favorite IPA. Yeah. You fruit.
So basically it's the same concept but with Grand Prix tickets. Yeah. Well done, Silverstone.
Mm. Yeah, well done, Silverstone. I mean, it clearly didn't put people off because apparently they've already sold out of general admission for the entire weekend. So...
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they've made bank, so. Yeah.
Fair enough.
That's Silverstone is Danza. I'm not gonna do that at all. I can't do it again. Fair enough. And that's actually pretty fucked up. And it's about the fans, you know. It's about the fans. It's not about the bottom line. It's not about making money. It's not about the environment. It's about the fans and absolutely taking every single fucking penny from them that you can. The stupid bastards. Buy all the merch. Buy the tickets.
But they get to listen to Lewis saying that they're the best fans.
Well, they are, because they fucking deserve that, man. If he doesn't do that, he's going on Fraud Watch, because he needs to gas them up, because they've just had their entire life savings ripped out from under him. Some of those poor souls. I've had a little bit of an issue, and I'm not.
You have a lot of issues. Yeah, I am. Go into it.
Well, I'm gonna have to honestly put myself on Fraud Watch.
Oh.
Ooh. I mean, I agree wholeheartedly.
So I was playing some F1 Manager. I think, Dan, you've been dabbling a bit with the F1 Manager, have you? The old...
Yeah, do you want to know? I'll tell you what, right? This is...
Have you hired me yet, Blake? Have you hired me yet? That's the question.
Well, we're going to get rid of...
reveal this live on the stream or live on this. So guess how many hours I've played of F1 Manager in the last 2 weeks?
200.
89.8 hours.
Mate,
I want people to know that I do have a full-time job as well.
He's a grinder. He's not fucking around.
No.
Joao, are you in F1 Manager?
Confirm.
Oh my god, dude! All right, so
I think I'm the only engineer that has a lower rating than GP.
No, there's a load of Hamlin. Everybody's. I've got Pierre Hamlin, and I'm really not feeling how he's getting on with Gasly. I feel like both of them are too French together. And it's causing some really weird dynamics. So I think we're gonna bend Hamlin, and Joao Jeannette is going to be my race engineer. We'll pull you up from the junior leagues. All right, Friday on my Twitch, we're gonna get Joao. I need to scout you though. What's your price?
I'm the cheapest.
I'll throw you some packet of crisps chips or something.
I'm like 200 grand a year, which is like the cheapest.
Oh my god! All right, I'm gonna find you. GP's way too much, and I talked to GP about his salary. I was like, that's fucking bullshit, man.
To everyone who's listening, my actual salary is exactly what F1 Manager says. So if you want to hire me, just keep that.
I love that. So to put myself on Fraud Watch, I have managed the fuel for the race car for over 100 actual Formula One Grand Prix. I ran both of the cars out of fuel on my last race. I'm so dead inside. I don't even remember which track it was, but my fourth race of the season, wherever that is, I was distraught. I was broken.
But the biggest faux pas I've had, and I haven't played much, I just kind of tried it. was on a safety car restart, not putting it back to a, like, attack mode.
You
just had, leaving it on conserve and harvest and on and save fuel behind the safety car.
Wasn't that what Lewis did at Zandvoort?
Confirmed. Yeah. And Abu Dhabi last year.
Oh my goodness. I mean, he's gonna you can't say Abu Dhabi on this podcast.
Sorry.
All right, you're welcome. We'll edit that out, right? Will we fuck?
Please. You got to do
just bleep it.
Yeah, you got to do 5 Michael Massey's now to make up for it.
But yeah, I fucked it, man. I ran us out of fuel. Unfortunately, Tsunoda was a lap down. So if it wasn't me on Fraud Watch, Tsunoda and F1 manager's on Fraud Watch because he's been driving absolutely dog shit. He can't give me feedback on the car. He's got on his outlap in practice. He says, "This fucking car." I'm like, "Mate, it's your outlap." So anyway,
he's dedicated. He's, you know, I like that.
Yeah,
he's special.
Yeah. But actually, I really actually like Yuki. So
he's a nice kid.
Why don't we? I don't really have any good boys for this week. Does anybody got any good boys? Engine mode, good boy.
Oh, I didn't even think about it till you just said it. Any good boys of the week? I can't think of any. So no. I'm gonna say no.
No, I think we skip it. Why don't we call it there for the night? We've had a nice long episode. We've had an awesome first guest.
Yeah.
So, João, this is your time on the pod. Tell people where, if you want them to find your Instagram, tell them where to find that. If you want to find your Twitter, which I don't think you use actively, or why don't you use this to plug your podcast for all of our Portuguese listeners? And they're also going to have some English episodes as well when we have
I've checked the stats. All 21 of you Portuguese listeners out there, listen up. This is for you.
You have to join the Domingos bandwagon. Yep. So on Instagram, I'm one lap behind. And I just post pictures. I like taking pictures.
You're actually a decent photographer.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind of you. You were a very good photographer yourself. So that's a big compliment. Yeah, so, but I do put in clips of our podcasts as stories. That's the only stories I ever post. I'm really not very active on Instagram. Twitter for the podcast is Domingos Podcast, which we use also not a lot because I don't have time. But now I'm going to start using it more because
we're gonna have a break. We're gonna sort you out.
And yeah, check out our podcast if you speak Portuguese, and if you don't, check out the Mexican Grand Prix edition of our podcast featuring Break himself.
Hello. Hola.
In English. So, I mean, I hope you use all your Portuguese words during the podcast, but the rest of Obrigado. It will be in English. Otherwise, you'll be very, your contribution will be very monotonic.
I love it. Yeah. Yeah. My Portuguese is shit. So,
but yeah, that's all I've got.
Awesome. Awesome. I think that's a wrap for today. We're going to be back. Are we going to do an episode next week? Are we going to fraud one in maybe next Tuesday, Dan?
Yeah, I think so. I think we could probably fraud one in next week. I'm going to go back. Don't edit this. You can leave it all as is. But I found my Engine Good Boy Award.
Okay, go on.
And it's
wait, hold on. Let me do the intro.
Oh my God, it's Engine Mode Good Boy.
It's whoever took the interview thingy podcast I did on the last lap, translated it all to Romanian and stuck it on like the largest Romanian sports website. Someone sent me a link to that earlier. And I appreciate that.
Those were some Twitter copy pasta mafia level of journalism on that one.
So what I'm going to do now is, because it's quite a big site in Romania, I'm now going to use that as my evidence for verification on Twitter.
Yeah, bro, send it.
Yeah. And then I can finally beat Matty WTF1 in getting verified.
Nice. That's amazing. That is absolutely amazing. Hey, you know what? When are we going to have the Engine Mode 11 versus Matty WTF1 boxing match? Because he still has you blocked on Twitter, doesn't he?
Yeah, I'm in heavy training for it now.
Okay.
So, you know, soon.
Good. All right. Well, you dirty bastards. João, thanks for joining us. I hope you have an awesome time.
Been a pleasure.
We will see you guys next time. And if you're on the stream, we're going to hang around for a minute. But wasn't everybody else stay fraudulent and go fuck yourselves? Right, Dan?
Yeah, fuck off.
Yeah, cool.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we'll see you guys. We'll see you guys soon. All right.
Amazon Business honors Jill Lau, Chief Procurement Officer of Global Network Bank. Last week, Jill saved big and used Amazon Business to help her team buy 327 headsets. Now Bob can keep his conversations to himself.
Wait, am I still on speakerphone?
With business buying easier than before, Jill now uses her extra time to focus on growing something big. Buy smarter, dream bigger. Visit Amazon Business, your partner for smart business buying.
Thank you for holding.
Hang it up, Bob.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.